So Jeremy Pelt, thank you very much for sitting down with me today. You're here with your Power Quintet from New York. You did one night last night at Frankie's. You're doing another night tonight at Frankie's. It's January 10th, I believe,
9th.
Or the 9th, yeah. Correct. And as I mentioned, one of the things I like to talk about, in addition to finding out what musicians are doing today, what their plans are, love to promote when I can. Mm. But what I really like to talk about is, what is it about jazz music that attracts musicians? What is it about the music that compels somebody to want to play it, let alone make a career out of it? And that's something I'm always very interested to learn about. So what is it that brought you to play this music?
Well, it was a calling, really. I feel like that's essentially what it was. And I do believe it. I know it sounds kind of like your head in the sky, but I do believe in that type of thing. And I think that once it grabbed me from the first time hearing it, it didn't let me go, and it still hasn't. And I don't believe that it will, because once you do have a creative bug, it doesn't allow you to stop. Even, you know, the greatest players, when you read about Thelonious Monk or Miles Davis having gone into a quote-unquote retirement stage, we're still vested in the music, so much so that they couldn't stay away from it.
What's your earliest memory of catching that bug?
I was a teenager, you know, and hearing records, that's what it was.
Did you have an influence, family member or somebody at school?
Nah. Well, I should say that my high school music teacher, John Magruder, that's when I started to quote unquote catch the bug, because before that I was coming from classical. And when I made it to high school, which in those days started at 10th grade, I'm not sure what it is now, but when I made it to another school, they didn't have an orchestra. They had a jazz band. They said, well, you know, you could play in a jazz band, and the rest is history.
So you had already had some classical training.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah. But by the time you heard jazz, that was it, no turning back.
Yeah, it completely corrupted it.
So the Power Quintet, the group you played with last mm-hmm. night at Frankie's, would be... would you care to describe how would you describe it if you were talking to somebody that said, well, we might come out, we like jazz, what is it like?
You know, I'm always loath to describe certain things. I would say that it's a band that is not a repertory or not a classical repertory band, and by that I mean that it's not a band that's playing your standard fare. It's very much driven by the compositions of the band members, and not to say that we just completely go for self. I mean, there are some standards that we play, but it's all in all a good feeling that draws the listener in and allows them to really be a part of something that's unique night after night.
One of the other things I'd like to try to get at, everybody has a different answer or different perspective on it, is you talked about this group that you're touring with right now, and you noted that you've got a lot of new compositions. You played some of your own compositions last night. One could compare it to music from the past, but what is your feeling, what is your connection to the jazz of history? Where does the music that you've written and performed last night and think about and play and hear, where does it come from? What's the connection to the music of the past?
Well, there's a direct connection to it. I mean, it's, you know, everybody that plays this music, the part of the bigger problem is that people that aren't involved in the creative aspect of the music dictate what shouldn't be, to a point to where some people that are indeed involved in the aspect, creative aspect of music, meaning musicians, start to believe the hype, you know, and or try to cater to what people that have no direct involvement with the musical aspect, you know, like writers and critics, they basically try to pander to that. And the reason why I say that is because in this music, everything is derivative. There are some trailblazers, for sure, when you think about the canon of the music and you think about the most individualist players, Ornette Coleman, you know, Eric Dolphy, Clifford Brown, Fats Navarro, Duke Ellington, you know, people that really paved a path and created something their own, there still were influences involved in that. So you can't just, nobody just was born and completed something completely, completely new. And so to that effect, you know, what you're hearing, I'm not afraid to say, has direct influence with, you know, some of my favorite composers. And that's a natural thing. You know, I think, I mean, I use devices from a lot of different composers to really make up my own style of writing, if I were to have one. You know, but I don't shy away from that. And but then the other side is that I don't think that this sounds exactly like this song, or this, you know, this particular composition sounds exactly like Wayne Shorter's song. You know what I mean? There's some influences, but it's very much its own song.
Is there I asked somewhat of a similar question to Stanley Clarke. I've asked it to other musicians, the one I just asked you, and Stanley Clarke, for example, said that, you know, a musician has to have his own language, mm-hmm. and you know, it may not be identical to another musician's language, but I guess if that's true, to the extent that is true, are you taught directly or indirectly by the people that came before? Is there a lineage there? You know, like when you play a line or you play a phrase, have you inherited some of that language from the past in,
sure.
in a way that's been handed down, like wisdom? Is there any wisdom in the language that you're playing?
The wisdom comes in how to twist the language that you've already learned from somebody else into something that is uniquely your own. That's where the wisdom comes from.
Musicians, when they're listening to other musicians, maybe critiquing them, might say, oh, he's not saying anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're saying something. Oh, that guy's just not saying anything. Might have very good technique. Mm-hmm. Might be playing lines very, you know, excellently, you know, technically excellent lines that mm-hmm. are even lifted from other players. But he's not saying something. What do you think of when you hear that type of description?
Well, there might be a case where it's true. I mean, it's all subjective. I know a lot of technical players that, you know, get away with careers. You know, and it might not be my cup of tea, but, it, you know, somebody's, because they're out there. I mean, I always respond from more of an emotional standpoint anyhow, because that's where I've been approaching the music for a long time now. You know, I mean, I've earlier on, you know, maybe when I was a preteen, you know, I would be very impressed by someone's technique, but that was never the full story for me, especially when I started to learn jazz, and especially when you listen to a bunch. I mean, there are a myriad of trumpet players that go from okay technique to splendid technique, and there's something to be taken from all of it. But you don't need to be a technician to be able to play a ballad. you know, you have to have you need the least amount of technique, meaning you know how you need to just know the basics of how to operate your instrument. But you know, if you're trying to convey an emotion, that's a whole different thing. And so I surmise that that's what people mean when they say he's not saying anything, because it's a true thing. Sometimes you hear somebody just rattling off, you know, chorus after chorus, and there's no story behind it.
Well said. Taking a different, maybe a lighter approach. What are you listening to? Do you listen to other music, or are you too busy playing or writing? Do you, time to listen to other stuff?
I do as much as possible. I mean, I've got a, and these are all excuses, because everybody who's not, you know, an adult and busy, you know, I got two kids, you know, and still can stand to listen to some more music. It does get hard. I mean, you can't necessarily be out doing the same things and checking out everything and being as ubiquitous as one might think you could be. But, no, I mean, there are some new musicians that I'll check out should I have the time. A lot of times, you know, I think the last time I was truly excited on a level of checking out new cats and albums in its entirety would have probably been when I was in my formative years, mid-teens, you know, mid to late teens, checking out, you know, Terrence Blanchard whenever he put out a new record, or Roy Hargrove whenever he put out a record, you know. Because still, that encapsulated so much of what I liked and what I loved about the music. And so, therefore, it was easy for me to listen to in its entirety. Nowadays, sometimes it is, I'm not going to lie, a chore to really be able to sit down. And there's, half of that has to do with, you know, does it really affect me from an emotional standpoint? But then the other half of it has to do with the way technology affects all of us of all ages. Technology now has affected people in a sense to where you don't necessarily find yourself sitting down, number one, in a relaxed state and listening to a complete record. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. Because you're always on the go, because you can be. You could pack every single record you have into a little tiny, thin-ass phone and, you know, go on your way and run errands, because now this music has become errand running.
Yes.
And that's not just jazz. That's everything. You want something. Everybody wants a soundtrack to life, which is a great thing to have a soundtrack. But then again, you're so widespread. So you could be listening to somebody's thing, but then you're picking up the dry cleaning. You're at the grocery store. So you're concentrated on other things. So, I mean, there's no way to go backwards. So to that effect, I can't really say that I've listened to anybody's record, even on an airplane. When you can't, you know, go dry cleaning and, you know.
Exactly, yeah.
But that's a lot of times when I get my, a lot of times when I have the most time to listen is when I'm driving long distances. But even then, I have to be engaged and really feeling the music to let a whole record go by.
Yeah, yeah.
And resist the temptation of being like, all right, I got it. And then put on something that I know is just going to hit me right away. No matter that I've heard it 10 million times.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's a theme that's I've heard a few times now with the change in technology and our culture with respect to, from your perspective, listening to music, from other people's perspectives, making records. Mm. You know, people don't make a record like they did before, where they go away for a week or more and have the funding, first place, and the time, the concentration.
Well, but
or
I
the
think
market for
well, that's different though. You know, because back in the day, no, they didn't have the fund. You know, those that was reserved for superstars.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? A week. I mean, that's a luxury. That's really too much time.
Well, this was Stanley Clark talking about.
That's Stanley Clark talking. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, you know, when you think about all those, even the more iconic records done by instrumentalists, I Love Supreme. So what? Yeah, Kind of Blue, right? It's all a day. You know, there were less songs. They weren't cutting 11 tracks for a record. They were doing 5, you know, but one day. And that was, Miles Davis was a superstar in jazz, and he had Columbia backing him, and they just went in the studio and did it in one day. Maybe 2 days. Probably, I think it was 2. I got to review, but it wasn't a week.
So how do you, I guess coming back to today, you've just released an album or you're about mm-hmm. to release an album. I looked a little bit at your catalog mm-hmm. and you've seemed to be on quite a large number of recordings. I think you have maybe 7 or 8 or 10 of your own.
About 14.
14, okay. Mm-hmm. What, tell me about your latest album.
Latest CD was something that we went in the studio and did last September in one day. It was myself and Danny Grissett on piano and Billy Drummond on drums and Ron Carter on bass. And so we recorded it. We rehearsed the day before and then recorded it the next day. And it was great, great atmosphere. I mean, this CD is, if anything, probably a departure from some of the things that I put out in the past, but also very much akin to the things that I put out in the past. And by that I mean that it's just a swinging good time. You know what I mean? There's no pretense to it. There's just, we're here to swing. You know, the swing jive. That's why it's called jive culture. Because, you know, there's of course, there's different connotations to jive, and we all know what the most familiar connotation is, but there's also a connotation that is really of a good time sense of movement, of jazz, you know, of dancing. And so that's what it really is about.
Let's talk about the Power Quintet. Mm. Can you just tell me about the guys in the band and what your next gig is, what the rest of your tour is?
Well, the guys in the band are all seasoned professionals, most of which have been on here longer than me, with the exception of Danny. You know, Danny Grissett is on piano. Steve Nelson is on vibes. Peter Washington is on bass. And Bill Stewart is on drums, and sometimes you just have something that clicks. That's the only way I can really describe it, you know. And you're blessed when that happens.
Well, that
doesn't happen all the time.
Evident last night. It definitely was swinging, you know. And when something swings, there's not much else you can do to make it better, mm-hmm. you know. It was fantastic. So one more night tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And then Los Angeles?
Go to Los Angeles, yeah.
And do you have more gigs on this tour?
Not on this particular tour. We're going to go to Europe in March for about 3 weeks.
What else does Jeremy Pelt have keeping him busy other than, you know,
Jeremy
what sounds
Pelt is
like a busy
trying as
one.
Hard as he possibly can to stay busy, you know.
Are you
I'm
teaching?
I'm free and available.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Am I teaching? A little bit. A little bit.
Yeah. And do you have any other types of projects you do, or are you really just out there swinging, playing
yeah,
your
I
jazz
mean,
and your tunes?
Who knows what to, you know, we just started the year. It's 2016. You know, there's always little things that might spark my interest.
Very good. Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time that you've given me. It's been a pleasure chatting with you, and it was absolutely fantastic seeing you and the band last night, and hope you come back to Vancouver soon.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right.